just taste. Now it's my pleasure to bring up our first poet, Doreen Sally. The theme of tonight's performance is the poetry of place. Doreen was born and raised in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is that finger that looks sort of points straight up, like the finger, into Lake Michigan. And as I think you'll hear, and as we talked about on the Poetry Beat radio show last Wednesday, growing up in that region and the scenes, sounds, forests, and smoke of the Upper Peninsula informs her work considerably. Her poems have appeared in Negative Capability, the Madison Review, the Kansas Quarterly, and in an anthology that resulted, that was called The Place That Holds Our History, that resulted from her being a winner in the 1990 Missouri Writers Biennial Contest. So please welcome to her first reading here at Duff's, Doreen Sally.
Simply can't seem to get rid of it. It's always with me. There is a particular place within that larger place which has been very influential, and that is a farm on which I grew up. It's 54 acres of mostly swampland. There's a farmhouse heated with a wood stove, several mouse-infested barns on the property, no inside bath, instead we had a smoke sauna. So it was a very primitive place. I spent a lot of time there as a child, and we moved there when I was a teenager. I could go on and on telling you about how beautiful the place is, how wild and green and lovely. The trees, the Indian paintbrush, the wild roses outside of the sauna. But instead, I'm going to show you the place through a series of poems. The first few that I'm going to read are basically memories about that place. The first one is called Echoes. It's dedicated to my grandmother, Mumu. Mumu is the Finnish word for old woman. Look at the sonnet. Mumu leans forward, elbows on knees, muddy boots tucked under the old gray bench. We listen. Spores of mosquitoes chant in the orchard. A soft, cool breeze drops blue fruit from the darkening sky. Everything else is silent. Listen, she whispers, pointing a bent, stiff finger towards the clearing. And suddenly, we hear them, the shaggy hunters, their screams reaching out through the dark wall of pine, each new cry echoing the last until silence. For a moment, the stillness returns. Then Mumu's howling reply, cold echoes lost in distant brush. Mice in the Barn. This is a poem in two parts. I'll pause at your intersection. They cannot see, their bodies pink and hairless as an infant's thumb, nuzzle one against the other, no mother near to warm them. My father takes the box, and bits of shredded paper fall to the floor, mingle with the onion skins and the dirt that has filtered through sacks of potatoes. Later, when the mother returns, carrying some small seed, to find those fragments in the corner, she will stand, and her two hind feet will spread like tiny leaves beneath her, and she will turn that seed, that pale, unopened eye, over and over in her hand. My father puts the box on the concrete porch, hot in the August sun, walks into the house and runs right back, carrying a pouch of plastic, a clear sack filled with water. Drops fall and darken the concrete. He dumps the mice into the bag, twists the open end. Pink legs spin in circles, penetrate the surface, pull at nothing, clasp each other as they sink down to the bottom and are still. Pale mouths open and close in the water, the blue roses of their lungs begin to fill. The twisted end spins out, rewinds, and the dark red silence behind their eyes, still shut, does some small dance. My father nods. His hand swings back, around. The nest of water sings across the sky, droplets falling from the arc, blue and silver in the sun. Slapped down to earth somewhere behind the field rock fence, in clover. Pink blossoms bend and cling to their wet stems. Thickening. It never would have lived, he said. Too young, half wild, so close to the highway. Gravel cracked with every step, and the red outline of death had passed the boundary of the body. All so clear, my calloused feet, the dust that covered everything, blue spruce against an iron sky, and the sweat beneath my father's arms as he lifted the loose form off the road and vanished into the woods. To my right and left, the pavement stretched as far as I could see, and the land pulled back from the highway's edge like the skin around a suture. Bits of rock pressed gentle holes in the bottoms of my feet, in thickening soles. Dusk. It is dusk, and my father is searching for treasure. Out in the field, he slowly walks in front of a fence of stones. It is dusk, and my father's form is fading into the shadows of rock and pine, the forest black, the sky bright red behind him. It is dusk, and I feel my father's heart beating, beating, skipping beats like the wings of owls waking in the trees. Oh, father, feel it. It is dusk. The wind picks up, but you kneel down into the cool night grass. If it is there, my father, bring it home. The next few poems I'm going to read, sort of a shift of pace here. These are love poems, after a fashion, depending on how you define the word love. The first one is called Something Red. A blanket keeps us from the cold. The sun is sinking just below the clouds, a clot of melon. Below us, jaded waves unwind, resting on the shore. The whiskey bottle in your lap holds bitterness. You stretch and smile, like other things that you have loved. The first taste has to hurt you. I hold my hands up to my face, fold them as in prayer. You frown and drink, brace your feet, pull the blanket tighter. Now the clouds are still, like two still blue reflections in a pond. I think that God is something red. You tuck my hands behind my back, roll us down the hill. At Henry Lake. Your bones are like your brothers, strong. They leap out of your face. They assault me as I think of moths aflutter near the Coleman, of your face lit from below, of how the shadows blackened out your eyes. I would have blinded you to have you for my wife. I would have beaten you when all our friends were sleeping. I would have brought my shotgun and pressed it to your cheek, to dream the bony cages of our children. But your bones are like your brothers, strong. They leap out of your face. They assault me as I think of moths aflutter near the Coleman, of your face lit from below, of how the shadows blacken out your eyes. Face of Lion. Why can't I forget your face of flame? Your head thrown to the side, your profile hard against the blue-green backdrop trees. The same sight keeps returning. No words, no explanation. As if I don't deserve to know the reason why I hit you. Why can't I forget the way you turned to look at me, unswerving, then brushed the black flies off your arms and walked away from me into the forest? And why can't I remember what you said as you were leaving, stepping past my glance into a grove of pine and maple that spilled their ready leaves around your going like 100 bloody hands. Okay, shifting gear again. I'm going to now do read some translations that I did of the Chilean poet Pablo Neruda. I think he's an appropriate person to be talking about tonight. He also has a very strong connection with the land of Chile, with the people there, with the language. So I'm going to read three poems, which I translated. The first one is called Ode for the Smell of Firewood. Later, with the stars open in the cold, I opened the door. the sea galloped in the night. Like a hand from the dark of the house, intense, came the scent of firewood. I saw the scent as if the tree were still alive, as if it still were pulsing. I saw it like a garment. I saw its ripped and fluttering branches. I went back inside the house, surrounded by dark balsam. Outside, the sparks of sky enticed like lodestones, and the firewood like fingers or jasmine or memory touched something in my heart. It wasn't the sharp scent of pine, no, not the torn bark of eucalyptus, nor the green perfumes of grapevines, but something more secretive. Because that one fragrance only once existed. And there, what in the world should I see in my own house at night, near the wintry sea, awaiting me, but the scent of the deepest rose, the heart carved from earth, something that struck me like a wave, cut loose from time and lost itself in me when I opened the door of the night. Ode to Sadness. Sadness, black beetle with seven broken legs, the egg spun in the cobweb, wounded rat, bones of a bitch. Do not enter here. You can't come in. Walk on. Return to the south with your umbrella. Return to the north with your viper's teeth. A poet lives here. Sadness cannot enter through these doors. Through my windows comes the air of the world, the new red roses, the village flags embroidered with its victories. Not you. Do not enter here. Shake your bat's wings. I will crush the feathers that fall from your cloak. I will sweep away the pieces of your corpse towards the four points of the wind. I will wring your neck, sew your eyes shut, cut your shroud, and bury you, sadness, and your gnawing bones beneath the quivering apple trees in spring. This next poem, the translation, it's called Ode to the Dictionary. It's one of the first poems that I read by Neruda, in which I really felt that I connected with him. The connection he's making between the land and the language, I think, is extremely important, both in his work and in my own. Ode to the Dictionary. Ox loin, heavy carrier, systematic, thick book. When I was young, I overlooked you. You hid your bright abilities, and I thought myself replete. So, pompous as a melancholy toad, I passed my judgment. I receive words straight from raging Sinai. I will reduce the forms to alchemy. I, the magician. And the great magician stayed silent. The dictionary, old and heavy, stayed silent in its overcoat of worn-out skin, holding in its secrets. But one day, after having used it and cast it off, after declaring it a useless and anachronistic camel, when for many months, patiently, it had served me as an armchair or a pillow, it revolted, stood up in my doorway and grew, shook its leaves and nests, moved the elevation of its foliage. It was a tree, natural, generous. Apple blossom, apple orchard, apple seed. And the words glittered in the inexhaustible treetop, opaque or clear, abundant in the leaves of language, full of truth and sound. I opened to a single one of your pages. chief, cloak. So wonderful to shake these syllables from air. And above, capsule, empty, waiting for sweet oils or ambrosia. And next to them, captive, captured, cappuccine, capricious, captivated. Words that glide like slippery grapes or burst into the light like blind seeds waiting in the cellars of vocabulary. Words that live again and give us life, once more kindled by the heart. Dictionary, you are not a tumulus, a sepulcher, a bier, a burial mound, a mausoleum. You are preservation, hidden fire, a plantation of rubies, the living perpetuity of essence, the granary of tongues. And it's beautiful to harvest from your lines the ancient derivations, the harsh, forgotten sentence, child of Spain, tempered like the blade of a plowshare, fixed in your catalog of antique tools, preserved with your beautiful precision and your immutable hardness. And the other word that we find lost among the printed lines suddenly turns smooth and delicious as an almond or tender as a fig inside our mouths. Dictionary, one hand of your thousand hands, one of your thousand emeralds, one single drop from your pure springs, one grain from your magnanimous granaries, in the precise moment carried to my lips, to the tip of my pen, to the depths of my inkwell. From your thick and sonorous profundity of forest, give me, when I need it, one single trill, the sweetness of a bee, one broken fragment of your ancient wood, perfumed through an eternity of jasmine, one syllable, a trembling, a sound, a seed. For I am of the earth, and I sing with words. Okay, we're coming back to the UP now. I've been working on a series of poems about an old Finnish guy who likes to take saunas. His name is Arni. Arni is not a memory, unlike the poems that I read earlier. Arni is, memory plus imagination, I guess. He's something that has become sort of larger, or someone who's become larger than anyone that I have ever known in the UP. He loves to take saunas. And by sauna, I mean the Finnish smoke sauna, what we call the savu sauna. It's very different from something you'd find at, say, Vic Tanni. You have to walk outside through the rain and through the snow and through the sleet to get to this place. It's a log building divided in half. One half of it is used for dressing, the other half for bathing. Now, the savu sauna has no chimney. The fire is built beneath the stones and it's let to go all day long. The smoke just kind of wafts out throughout the whole building all day long. And over the years, the walls become blackened with soot and very rich and fragrant. The walls also become dirty because of the year's worth of soot. The one that we had on our farm had been there for about 60 years, my grandfather. They built it. And you've had many years of build-up. You'd go in there and get very clean, but you'd also get very gritty at the same time. And you'd come out smelling sort of like a hazelnut or something. So it's a wonderful place. The smoke, of course, when the people go in there, there can't be smoke in there. So the way that it works is You let the fire burn out before the water on the stones, and then the steam chases out all of the smoke through a little window up on the top. And then you close up the window and you go in there and you cook for about as long as you can take it. The sauna is not just used for bathing for the Finnish people. They would build the sauna before they built their homes, and they'd live there while they were building the homes. They would use it for smoking foods such as fish and sausage. Women would go there to give birth. People would go there during times of sickness, and they would also go there to die. So it was a place of enormous importance in the lives of these people. What else can I tell you? That's about it for that. These are some of the reasons why Arne likes the sauna. It's so important in his life. It has become a ritual. It's a place of joy, pain, comfort, and an awful lot of memories, too. The first poem that I'm going to read is called Shut In. After it snows all day, after waltzing with the waltzes, after cold feet and no socks thick enough to warm them, after cup on cup of coffee in the quiet, no bells, only the thick, soft hiss of snow falling. After Anna's gone and maple burns itself to gray, after nothing soothes him that he does, not the coffee tip from cup to saucer cooling, not the cheese or bread or pickles on a plate, after everything that can not comfort him does not comfort him, Arne laces up his boots and walks towards the sauna. Spruce boughs bend over the path, black in the moonlight, dropping fists of ice, dimpled with snow. The door is frozen shut, he thinks. The snakes are sleeping. The door is brown and gray behind the falling white. The hinge is black. Arne takes his time. This next poem is a poem in three parts. I'll pause between each section. This is Arne speaking now. Try to imagine that it's not me, but him. Let's see. There are some Finnish words in here that I should translate for you. Mitä kuuluu means how are you? And paha poika means bad boy. Those are the only words I know in Finnish, by the way. Arne left your sauna. In the snow I see your face again, but old now, lined for many winters. I'd almost forgotten. Mitä kuuluu? Paha poika. Words that slice the evening sky outside the shack like birds. All dead, and ashes of their feathers on the snow outside the sauna. I am clean and steam rises from my limbs. My mouth is frozen shut. My teeth are dark inside my mouth. I smile at night. They freeze up into stars. In the snow I see your face again, but old now, lined for many winters. Mitä kuuluu? I'd almost forgotten how you pushed my head down into the center of the bucket and scrubbed and swirled my hair until it squeaked between your fingers. Paha poika. And the thick snow held the world outside in quietness, as water sang upon the stones and dense before the steam. So much heat we couldn't breathe, so we left and dressed by lamplight in the cold room that cracked into December. And the drifts reached even to the windows as the dying coals chirped like winter birds into their wings. The heat has worn me out tonight. The moon hangs sharp as the tip of a 12-point buck. The pines are nice at night. Your eyes are nice at night. And 7 times I've seen them merge with mine in different colors, shapes, behind the lavish contours of an island. And the wild roses lean now on the shoulder of the snow. No bucks or roses then tonight, no bottom feeders, like the carp we used to dry and smoke to sweetness on the ceiling in the sauna. No skin's lovelier than yours was in the lamplight, pale and hickory steaming in the carbon-coated darkness of these walls. Sauna prayer. Place of conception, birth, and death, holder of hands, that which keeps me busy, blackened place of cleanliness, be with me now. Place in whose heat my breath was fostered, place of steam and heat where I was born, place of life given again and again, place where I die. Be always warm. Place of Anna's breathing and the silence of her skin. Place that holds our history within its gritty walls. Place of lamplit loveliness and smells of fish and sausage. Place of snakes and skunks, stay with me now. Be warm, be hot. Rage the blackened stones into pure redness. Smoke the place up. Open the little window. I can take the heat. This next poem is a fairly new poem. Arnie is now leaving the sauna and walking around in the woods for one reason or another. This poem is called Woods Walking. Woods walking, trying to forget. He hadn't found the place to help him yet, get rid of all those memories. He wanted to find a hollow log and dump them in, rescind any importance they once had, then stuff the hole with a big field stone from the fence on the edge of the forest. He knew the worst were mixed in with the best, but they had become too heavy, and he was tired. There it was, a fallen birch, mired in the muck and moldering leaves of a stagnant puddle. It didn't take him long to solve the riddle. A few taps on the trunk, a trail of bark that had peeled away, and he found a space to work in. Out the images came, her in the sauna lamplight, pale skin gleaming. Down the hole with you, he said, a little farther, make room for more. Next, her startled face as it loomed in the icy darkness, before he grabbed her wrist and forced her down into the snow. Burr, that's a cold one, he cackled. In you go. Nestle with your buddy there, so you get warm. Those evenings on the farm, beneath the apple trees, mosquitoes on her arms that she gently brushed away. It barely fit, that one. He had to turn it sideways, put a little weight behind it, trying to get it in there without breaking. Hell, he muttered. Let it break. Now that hunk of shale from the field stone fence to block the hole with, all told, a pretty decent job. He did walk lighter. He'd head for home now, lock the doors behind him, go to bed. Anything else in there for him to tread? And still his pulse kept beating, beating. So he left that place, free of all those memories, free to start a whole new world of dreaming. Looking up, he saw the treetops gleaming in the sunlight, the wind lifting the branches from the shade into the sun. Finches leapt like his thoughts across that oscillating, leafy world. Never saw him, never waiting. But he still could see her face, half light, half shade, in the patterns that the leafy background made. The last poem I'm going to read is, this brings us back to the actual memories. We're away from the Arnie poems now. This is called Southwood. It's a poem for my father. Sapwood is the word I want. The yellow slivers split and fall away, the living tissue. Clean resin coats my hands and sticks. I toss the severed pieces on the pile and turn for more. My father swings the axe again, again. This iron pulse across our land beats harder now, like that dark muscle underneath his ribs, like this slow healing. Barrel-chested man, fingers thick as hammer handles, nails black with earth and ore before the fibrillation. And afterwards, the monitor, green tracings curved across the black screen like a fence about to be broken. Chips of all our hearts about the room, too white with winter. It is spring. Holding these sharp fragments, letting go, the sweet scent lingers on my skin. My father brings the axe down hard and cracks the heartwood. Thank you very much.